This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at southdakotachannel.org.
Good morning. We will call the Senate local government to order and greet everyone out on the internet that's listening to us this morning. Would remind everyone to please turn your cell phones off or at least put them on wiggle. At this time, we'll have the secretary call a roll call.
Senator Feagin.
Here.
Hager.
Here.
Olson. Excuse. Sent Heiner.
Here.
Sutton.
Here.
Olien.
Here.
Hewing.
Here. Okay, we do have a quorum. Thank you. At this time, we'll take a motion for the approval of the minutes of the last meeting.
So moved.
Okay, we have a motion by Senator Sutton, seconded by Senator Holine for approval of the minutes. All of those in favor of the motion will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Could remind everyone that's going to testify today to please sign in at the podium legibly. And if you have any handouts, please distribute them through our pages, and they'll get them up to the committee. I especially want to welcome my friends from Spearfish in the back row there for coming in to make sure I'm doing my job for my district. Welcome. Today we've got five bills to consider. We'll begin with House Bill 1003. And at this time, we will take proponent testimony on that. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Thank you. My name is Mike Valley. I represent District 20 from Mitchell, representing Davis and Aurora and Girard County. House Bill 1003, I guess. We got to get the right nomenclature here. Is a product of the interim county committee this summer. And the bulk of it came from the auditor in Davison County on some things when they had gone through the books and wanted to see changed. They're pretty much just cleanup bill, cleanup items. I'll just go through them very quickly. The first one, Section 1, deals with the closing of the courthouse, and it said you could only close it for one day. And so what we're doing here is we're opening it up that if you have a blizzard or you have an emergency, you can close it for more than one day. Section 2 deals with Memorial Day, and it changes the shall to May. You still can appropriate funds to observe Memorial Day, but we're putting that in the May category rather than in the shall. Section 3 is an interesting one. That was in the case if you're having a county commission meeting and there are some people misbehaving, that you could fine them $5 and throw them into the clink for 24 hours. Well, we decided that to change that, take off the 24 hours in the local jail because we got jail problems anyway with having people in there, and move it to $25. Because it was done, I think, in the 1880s sometime. Well, the other body decided that, why do we even have $25? Let's just take it out. So at this point, we've taken pretty much out most of that section. Section 4 and 5 had to deal with townships. 4 deals with when you need to turn in your oath to the county auditor. And Section 5 deals with the when the township clerk needs to bring in the levies that they're going to put on the books, and setting a date for it the same day as the oath of office that need to be turned into the county auditor. Pretty much just a cleanup bill, and would take any questions that you may have on this bill. I'd urge your support. Like I said, it came out of the committee. I think it was the only one, and you were the vice chair, I think might have been the only one that was unanimous out of our county committee. So with that, I'd urge your support. And I'll stand by for questions. I'd like to take questions now if I could, because I have an 8 o'clock that I am chairman of, and I also have a bill in front of it. So if you do have questions, if it's all right with the chair, I could take them now.
Absolutely. Does any of the committee members have questions of Senator Valley? Senator Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator, for bringing this. I had just a couple questions, if you would allow me the leniency, Mr. Chair. If we're removing the limit of the one-day closing, what negative effects do you see of that, and is there a concern that the county chairman of the county commissioner board could leave it closed for more than one day at a time or something like that? I mean, do you have any concerns in that regard?
That's a real good question. I had the same question, and I looked at it. And if we read in there, it says close in case of emergency or severe weather. And if you go on, it says an emergency for the purpose of this section is an unforeseen occurrence or combination of circumstances that calls for immediate action or remedy. So just because I'm not liking how the vote is going to go down on the commission, I can't just stand and say, well, we're going to close this courthouse here. I mean, it's got to be an emergency that, as they say here, pretty unforeseen occurrence and combination of circumstances that are, you know, calls for immediate action. So I think that would be my answer to your question.
Thank you, Senator. Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Man.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The second question that I have is I would agree in the removal of the imprisonment portion, but as a follow-up to that comment, what can the board do? It says they may enforce obedience to all others, or to its orders by attachment or compulsory process. But what does that mean? I mean, what hammer do they have if somebody's really acting up?
Well, I would guess that you could have the sheriff take care of the action. That would be my assumption, is that's why you would have the sheriff there and make sure that if the guy was being disruptive, to have him, you know, removed. That would be my thought. I have not been a county commissioner. There are maybe some people that have been a county commissioner that could comment on that. And the chair might be a real good person to help bail me out there.
I can, if you'll indulge me here, I can shed some light on both of your questions. The first question on the closure, when I was a sitting county commissioner as well as a chairman several times, we would have a snow day that it was impossible for folks to get to the courthouse, and you would close it. And it did. The law just allowed you to do one day. And there were times when we'd have a blizzard set in, and it would be more than one day. So this is going to accommodate that so that you can legally close it for more days. And the second one, if you had someone acting up, or you thought someone was going to act up, you would beforehand, you would ask a member of the sheriff's office or a deputy or someone to come over and be present at your meeting, and they could take care of it at that time. Any further questions of Senator Valley before he departs? Seeing none, thank you, sir.
Thank you. We'd appreciate your support.
Do we have any further proponents on House Bill 1003? Okay, further proponents. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Dick Howard. I'm with the South Dakota Association of Towns and Townships. There are two sections in this bill which relates to when townships are to submit certain documents to the county auditor. Section 4 deals with the oath of office that the county commissioners or new township supervisors have to take. It currently says that each oath shall be filed immediately. We're proposing here, and we agree with this, that it be changed to a date certain, the last day of March. Section 5 deals with when the township clerk is to notify the auditor of the taxes that the township proposes to levy. And here it says that it shall be done within a few days. We're also proposing that be set at the last day of March. So our clerks and supervisors support this amendment, and so we're supportive of the bill.
Okay, thank you. Any further proponents? Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Roger Tellinghusen, registered lobbyist on behalf of the South Dakota Association of County Commissioners. We'd just like to offer our support. As Senator Valley said, this came out of the Interim Committee on County Government, and we believe the changes are good. They're really just cleanup. Hope you'll support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents? Further proponents on House Bill 1003? Seeing none, do we have any opponents to House Bill 1003? Okay, seeing none, we will close the testimony from the floor and offer for discussion from the committee. Seeing no discussion, we will offer bill action.
Mr. Chair, I'll move due pass.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion made by Senator Holeen for due pass and seconded by Senator Olson. Is there any discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
Thank you. Don't have a whole lot to offer on the bill because it seems like, as the proponents have said, just clean up and don't see anything to get too concerned about, and I think it's a pretty easy bill.
Okay. We do have a motion before us. Motion made by Senator Holeen and seconded by Senator Olson for due pass. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll? All those in favor will say aye. All those nay.
Senator Feagin.
Aye.
Hager.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Heinert.
Aye.
Sutton.
Aye.
Holeen.
Aye.
Ewing.
Aye. Okay, we do have a unanimous motion.
With consent.
Second.
Okay. We have a consent motion from Senator Olson, seconded by Senator Holeen. All those in favor of the motion will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. This bill will go on down to the floor and be placed on the consent calendar. Next bill is House Bill, I neglected to ask our pages to come forward and introduce themselves and tell us a little bit about yourself.
I sent one downstairs.
Okay, well, we'll let this young gal.
My name is Hannah Cleveland, and I'm from Aberdeen. I go to Aberdeen Christian, and I plan on going to Mid-America Nazarene University in Olathe, Kansas next year.
Thank you.
My name is Riley Holmenberg. I go to school in Beersford, and I plan to attend college for women's studies.
All right. Thank you. Okay, continuing on. We will now hear testimony for House Bill 1034. Title is to revise certain provisions concerning local government elections. Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Chantel Krebs, South Dakota Secretary of State. Going to diverge just a bit. I remember the day of 1991 when I was a legislative page. And came to these scary halls, and looking before our esteemed legislators at that point to introduce yourself was always a nerve-wracking event. So, anyway.
Did you want to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself?
I thought I did that already, but you know what, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to again. Glad to be sitting on this side. Mr. Vice Chair. All righty. We'll move on. House Bill 1034. Thank you for indulging us on behalf of the Secretary of State's office to help clean up some language that we have reviewed in election code. And this has been presented to you, if you'll notice, at the request of the State Board of Elections. And, of course, the State Board of Elections is a bipartisan board that submits legislation to you for review. So specifically in House Bill 1034, you'll see in Section 1, we've combined several things together in this bill. So if you'll allow me to walk through each section, we talk about special districts in Section 1, then we move to Section 2, which talks about the county name changes and the ballot associated with the county name change, and then we move into Section 3 and 4, we're talking about ballot colors. And we did that because we have several items, and we had our LRC staff thought they could combine some bills together to make it a little easier for you. Section 1, again, is adding a clarification that when the county auditor has to publish the notices of the voter registration deadline for special district formation elections. So if you look in line 7 and 8, we're talking about in on page 1, section 1, line 7 and 8, we're adding the language, if the eligible voters are defined as landowners, so we're talking about, you know, a road district election or some type of special district election, and they're the landowners for this special district to be formed, the notice of the voter registration deadline does not need to be published. And that's because the landowners are your voters, not anybody in the general public. It's specific to landowners. So that way your county auditor doesn't have to incur the cost of publishing that voter registration deadline notice, because it's very specific to a special district notification, or excuse me, a special district election. That's what Section 1 does. Section 2, moving into Section 2, this is in response from last year's legislation for the county name change. Specifically, you remember Shannon County has been changed and the voters approved the name change to Oglala Lakota. In that, our Fall River County auditor is asking for us to add language so that in the future they would not have to have a separate ballot, that we're asking you to be able to allow a county auditor to place the question on the general election using an optical scan ballot versus having a printing a separate ballot. Obviously, costs incurring for your county auditor. This is simplifying that process in Section 2. Moving into Sections 3 and 4 of House Bill 1034, and that's on page 2 and 3 of the bill. Section 3 and 4, we're clarifying here. A lot of our jurisdictions, our local jurisdictions, already do this, but there is nothing in state statute, and so we want to make it very clear that if you're combining a city and school election, which, of course, again, is prescribed, the rules are prescribed by the Board of Elections, this allows for one jurisdiction to use one color of a ballot, that's a white ballot, and the other one to use a contrasting color, so that those combined jurisdiction, like a city and school election, they can use contrasting colors for ballots in that combined election. So with that, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, thank you for the time, and I'll stand by for questions at a later date.
Thank you. Further proponents on House Bill 1034. Further proponents. Seeing none, do we have any opponents to House Bill 1034? Must have explained it quite well. Seeing none, we'll close the testimony from the floor and offer it to the committee for discussion. Or questions? Senator Heiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question would be for Mrs. Krebs.
Go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm just going back through 7-1-69, and tell me how that works. If they vote to change the name, but then doesn't want the county or the state to pay for it, how does that work?
Madam Secretary.
Mr. Chair, Senator Heiner, could you clarify your question again one more time?
Well, I'm trying to read through 7-1-69 right now, and it says, shall the name of this county be changed to blank, and county funds be appropriated to pay for all local government and state government costs associated with the name change? Well, if they're voting, so it's not two separate things. It's either they're changing the name and the county has to pay for it. Yep. There's no way they can vote for the name change and vote not to pay for it. Correct?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that is correct, Senator. So you're voting, the question that you may be asking is, what are they voting for, yes or no? And I believe that would be the actual question placed on the ballot. Would you, as the voter, approve the name change, yes or no? And then, of course, the county incurs those costs for that vote. the point we're making, excuse me, the language that we're adding here is really for the ballot itself and how it's presented. So it doesn't have to be on two separate ballots. For example, last year when that election had to be held for the name change, the Fall River County auditor had to have a separate ballot for that particular question. Do you as a citizen vote to change the name of the county? Plus, she had to have another ballot printed. So, of course, the costs are incurred. We're asking you to consider placing that on one using the optical scan ballot.
Okay.
Thank you.
That's what I thought. Thank you.
Any further questions of Secretary? Senator Holing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Secretary Krebs, in Section 1, could you walk me through an example or two of, let's say, where the landowners are the only people voting in that specific election? I just want to make sure that the landowners are adequately notified.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, so we clarify in state law here, we say special districts. Special districts are many and a lot. There are your sanitary districts, your fire, or your fire ambulance districts, your road districts, water districts, whatever it may be. And those are specific votes or elections that pertain to the landowner. So what we're asking in this language is to say that the county auditor doesn't have to publish the note of voter registration because it's specific to the landowner. Those landowners are notified of that election by the county auditor in a different process. So they are notified. We're just asking to take the language out saying you don't have to publish. The county auditor doesn't have to publish because of the cost that's being incurred to publish that. Did I clarify that, Senator Holeen?
Further questions of the Secretary? Okay, thank you. Well, unless there's further questions, I'll put it up for committee action.
Chair.
Senator Holeen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move do pass.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Senator Holeen and a second by Senator Olson for do pass on House Bill 1034. Any discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chair, looks like a good bill. I think that Senator Heinert and myself had our questions clarified just to the satisfaction that, you know, it's a good bill, still protects the voters, and just urge do pass.
Okay. We do have a do pass motion by Senator Holeen, seconded by Senator Olson for do pass. Madam Secretary, please call the roll. Those in favor, aye. Those opposed, nay.
Senator Feagin.
Aye.
Hager.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Heinert.
Aye.
Sutton.
Aye.
Holian.
Aye.
Hewing.
Aye. Okay, we do have a unanimous motion on House Bill 1035.
Consent.
Motion made by Senator Olson, seconded by Senator Holeen to put the House Bill 1035 on the consent calendar. All those in favor of the motion will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. The bill will go on down to the floor on the consent calendar. All righty. Next bill, House Bill 1035, revise and repeal certain provisions concerning voter registration, vote centers, and conducting elections. Proponent testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Chantel Krebs, South Dakota Secretary of State. Again, House Bill 1034 is continued cleanup language. And again, if you notice Section 1, 2, and 3, we do have different items that we'll be discussing here, but the LRC staff was gracious enough to put them into one bill for you so you didn't have three separate bills to address. So I'll walk through each section. Section 1 is asking for us to repeal, I'm going to flip it over here to that page, repeal Section 112-4-4.11. If you notice that lines 5 through 10 is a complete repeal. If you look at the language here, it's already being covered in 12-4-4.4. We're asking in this particular, these lines that I'm asking you to delete or repeal, South Dakotans that are overseas, we're asking adult children to overseas citizens to submit more documentation than any other person registering to vote has to supply. So in this particular language, we're saying you need to submit not only, you know, some type of photocopy of a identification, but also we're saying you need to have a passport. And so we're saying, why would you have an ask for an adult citizen overseas registering to vote to ask for more identification than any other individual registering to vote? And what, like I said, The voter registration requirements are in 12-4-4.4, so we're repealing language that's already covered in another state statute that talks about registration and voting by overseas citizens. And it says specifically, these are the citizens or a spouse or a parent that was last domiciled in South Dakota immediately prior to departure, or they don't have a, or they don't maintain a domicile, is not registered to vote, is not voting in any other state. That's who can vote, register to vote here, or if they're qualified to vote according to law, of course, being a citizen 18 years of age and not a felon, and the list goes on. So we're asking you for to repeal that language. The section 2, the next section, is on page 1 of the bill at the bottom, but the change is actually on page 2 of the House Bill 1035. We're asking you to repeal subsection 4, which is line 9 and 10. This is specific to vote centers. We're asking you to consider the repealer language for the vote centers. This is where a jurisdiction has to provide, so a city or a school or a county would have to provide a plan on how they're going to utilize, or a plan for their actual election utilizing vote centers. We don't feel at the Secretary of State's office that they should have to be required as a local jurisdiction to submit a plan on how they're going to run and utilize their vote centers. We, of course, guide them and walk them through the process, but requiring a state statute to do so, many of them don't and are not aware that they should be have been doing this. And so we're saying, let's repeal this language. We're confident with our guidance. They know what they're doing and not needing to submit a plan. Section 3 is very similar language I'm asking you here, is another repealer of language. At the bottom of page 2 of the bill, we're asking you to repeal language that says, requesting the Secretary of State to run their election for them, a local jurisdiction. We don't feel that's the role of our job. That's why they have deputies. That's why you have other officers with them within their office, whether it be a school election, whether it be a municipal election, a finance officer, whether it be a county election, or you know, whatever it may be. We don't feel that the Secretary of State should be coming in and running a local election. We all know that our elections are run locally, and we have great officials leading the charge. So we're asking them, asking you to repeal that language that is currently in state law. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll stand by for questions.
Well, while you're there, we'll go ahead and... Does the committee have any questions of the Secretary? Senator Heiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And could you explain to me, so say you have an election coming up and the person running the election, is in an accident, or, you know, something happens, or maybe there's some friction between the county commissioners and the auditor, or however. I mean, there's an array of things that could go wrong. Can you explain to me how a county goes about continuing that planned election?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senator Heinert, specifically the process of the election. You know, every year our office provides training to our local officials or our jurisdictions. We provide one set of training to our county auditors for several days, and that includes also training to their deputy auditors or other staff members that they may not call a deputy. Maybe it's just another officer of that office. We also provide a separate several-day training to our local jurisdictions, like your schools and your cities. And they have, of course, their support staff with them. And along the way, during an election or an upcoming election, our office is guiding them through every part of the process for every deadline to be met, whether it be, don't forget, girls or ladies and gentlemen, in your election, don't forget this is the date you have to publish the notice. Don't forget this is the date that the reminder for the voter registration deadline is. Don't forget this is the day you have to put your sample ballot in the paper. You know, every process, we're talking to them probably on a daily basis as we get closer. For these smaller city elections, right now we have a lot of them going on. We're guiding through the process. So with that, if there was, like you said, an issue or an emergency, that secondary backup staff has been trained alongside of them, and they know as the official election officer that they need that support staff just in case. And we've made sure in the training that they have that support staff trained right along with them. And the communication from our office includes that support staff as well. And so with that, we would be there for any support as far as guidance that day if something happened. But the actual election is run by that person in that jurisdiction, whoever it may be. Mr. Chair, Senator Heinert.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions from the committee? Senator Feagin.
Is there any harm leaving this section in the bill? 12-18-41?
Mr. Chair, Senator Feagin, section 12-18-41?
Correct.
Mr. Chair, would the question be, would there be any harm? No, there wouldn't be any harm. However, when you look at our statutory requirements of the Secretary of State in 1-8, I wouldn't say that that would be a part of our job or our role and function in this office. Our role and our function is to process, to guide them through the process, but to actually come in and run an election, I would beg to have concern that in future years, the chief elections officer could use that power in an inappropriate way, if I said that
okay.
Kindly.
Thank you.
Senator Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question would be, are you aware of instances where the Secretary of State's office has come in and conducted elections when they could not?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sutton, I'm going to turn to my staff, my deputy who's been in that office over 18 years. Can you recall, Kia Warren, can you recall any time that you've had to step in? 2012, wasn't it? So Deputy Warren, who is our deputy for elections, had worked under Secretary Hazeltine and Secretary Nelson, has never recalled the time that their office had at any time then jumped in to run or stepped in to run an election. This language was added in the most recent years of 2012. And so that's why, again, we feel it's only appropriate that maybe the previous administration thought something different and otherwise, but there's been no cases, and that's why we think it's only appropriate to repeal it.
Okay, thank you. Further questions? Follow up? Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you also shed some light on why this was added then in 2012? I mean, I know many of us were here, but I don't specifically remember the discussion. But
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we don't know why. I think that's best saying it, that we don't feel it's an appropriate role. We don't feel it's something that we should be doing. We are here. And again, when you look at my constitutional role, what's defined in the state constitution as Secretary of State, what's defined in state statute as the job duties of our office, this is not one of them.
Okay, thank you. I think you're safe to go sit down for a minute. Do we have any further proponents on House Bill 1035? Good morning again, sir.
Morning, Mr. Chair. Roger Telling, Houston, registered lobbyist on behalf of the South Dakota County Officials Association, which includes the treasurers, register of deeds, and auditors. Auditors being the primary election officials on a local level. We just rise in support of this bill. Our organization has worked with the Board of Elections in coming up with some of the language and changes that are being proposed, and we'd encourage your support. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any further proponents on House Bill 1035? Further proponents? Seeing none, do we have any opponents for House Bill 1035? Tough bills. Okay, we'll close the testimony from the floor and offer it to the committee for discussion or action.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Holeen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move do pass.
Second.
Okay, we have a do-pass motion by Senator Holeen and seconded by Senator Olson. Any discussion on the motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank the Secretary of State's office. After 6 years of local government, I've seen bills where questions have been asked and answers were not provided, then I just want to thank the Secretary of State. Obviously, these seem like simple bills, but I've seen years in the past where simple bills have been gummed up because people haven't completely thought them through. So I want to just thank the Secretary of State. I think this is another good bill, and I would urge support.
Okay, I would also offer consideration to that as well. Anytime we can get rid of language and law is a good thing. So at this time, we have a motion by Senator Holeen, seconded by Senator Olson for due pass on House Bill 1035. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll? Those in favor will say aye. Those opposing will say nay.
Senator Feagin.
Aye.
Hager.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Heiner.
Aye.
Sutton.
Aye.
Holeen.
Aye.
Hewing.
Aye. Okay, we have a unanimous motion for a due pass for House Bill 1035.
Second.
And we have a motion from Senator Olson, seconded by Senator Holeen, to add to the consent calendar. All those in favor of the motion will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Aye.
Okay, it has failed. It will go down to the floor for debate. Okay. Next bill is Senate Bill 74, and our prime sponsor on that bill hasn't arrived yet. I think you already notified him that. Did you notify Senator Van Gerpen? Okay. We'll take just a very short recess here to allow our senator that is proposing this bill to get here.
You could bring up 64.
Yeah, that's true. We could do that
while you're waiting.
Okay. While we're waiting, we'll go ahead and work Senate Bill 64, a bill that we held over from last week to revise the voting authority of an alderman. At this time, we'll take further testimony on Senate Bill 64. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I know we had some testimony on Bill 64 before. Again, this is to clarify the voting responsibilities of a president or vice president of city council. I do have an amendment, I believe, that's being handed out as well.
Okay, you can speak to the amendment as well as the bill at this time, and then we'll take further action on it.
Okay. Again, this is just to clarify the voting requirements of the vice president and president of the council. If you want to go through the amendment, I can briefly go through that. Most of its clarification, we did add a couple of sections in here. I did work with LRC, my city attorney from Del Rapids, and Municipal League as well on some of these changes. I thought this was going to be an easy bill as well, but we're really trying to tighten up the language within this bill to make sure there is no vague language so that the city councils can interpret it differently. Members elect, the very first one on page 1, line 14, members elect. There's a lot of debate on what members elect is. There's different definitions on members elect, so we just changed it to members. On page 2, line 3, inserting absence or after temporary, basically to say that also if that person is absent, the language still applies. On page 2, line 4, we're deleting everything after president and inserting or vice president. And then also specifying the section of the law that it applies. So that's just more clarification there. The one change that we did make to this bill on page 3, line 18, more clarification. This is the section of the bill that really makes the most change. Before we had, however, the president of the council or vice president of the council shall only vote as an alderman in the absence of the mayor. No alderman may vote as the mayor to break a tie. So this change, delete shall only vote as, and inserts acting as the mayor shall only vote as an alderman to clarify that they're voting as an alderman. Before it just said they have one vote. It still says that at the end, no alderman may vote as a mayor to break a tie, but it's just more clarification. On page 3, line 19, we just removed that line because the piece above kind of replaces that. Page 3, line 24, added or appointed. I guess there was some question as to if it's an elected official, does that mean if you have somebody who's appointed, do they count as well? So we just added that for more clarification. Page 4, line 1, this was to add more clarity also. In light of this bill was brought up due to some of the issues that occurred in Hartford. So after everything happened in Hartford, several of their council members resigned. And what happened was they had total members of 6, and they got down to 3. Legally, I don't think they're allowed to do business if you read the law. So what this does is it adds a section to say, when a seat on a council is vacant due to removal, resignation, death, or by operation of law, the quorum consists of the majority of the members of the council who remain qualified. So in this case, there would be 3 members of the council, and they would need a majority of those council members to vote, but they could continue to do business at that point. Technically, they really shouldn't do any kind of business, but this would allow them to pay the bills, to appoint new members, and so on. On page 4, line 2, the concern here was, when I talked to my city attorney, is this might actually tie the hands of the council, because we were trying to clarify this language by saying, however, majority of the quorum may act only on non-ordinance items before the council. Well, if you have a full council, you still have a majority of the quorum there. So what this was saying was, well, you can't act on non-ordinance items. We're trying to prevent the council from acting on these non-ordinance items when they don't have the majority of the council there. But this basically speaks to the fact that if they have a full council, they still couldn't act on non-ordinance items. So we decided that language was actually muddying the waters and took that piece out. On page 4, line 10, we just put it back the way it was in the original law. Page 4, line 11, we just clarified the language in there by adding all the aldermen shall be, because the way it read is it could be considered that the mayor is part of that vote, and that is not the case. It's just the alderman. And on page 4, line 12, this was just more clarification, because when it talks about the majority vote of the common council is necessary to pass an ordinance or proposal. Proposal is very vague in this case. It could mean anything. So we just wanted to clarify that language by adding to create a liability against the municipality or expend or appropriate its money to refer to language that was above. And then again, page 4, line 13, it's just was unclear, so that's more clarification. And we took out some grammatical error on page 4, line 18, and more clarification, the last one on page 4, line 19, delete the word elect. So
I think that's about the busiest amendment I've ever seen. Okay, at this time we have amendment 64SD offered. What's the pleasure of the committee on this amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Holeen.
I'll move amendment 64SD.
Second.
Okay. Amendment. We have a motion to add amendment 64SD by Senator Holeen and seconded by Senator Hager. All those in favor of the motion will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you.
Thank you.
I guess I will offer any further proponent testimony on the amended Senate Bill 64. Welcome, Ms. Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Yvonne Taylor with the South Dakota Municipal League. Oops, I'm sorry, I have my badge. It's in my bag, but I don't have one. I'll go get it.
Go to jail.
Well, don't put me in jail. I can tell you that over the last week, this section of the law has gotten more thought than it has in the entire 100 years it has been in existence, up to and including removing an apostrophe over the weekend. We have been noodling and noodling and noodling on this, and we think we may be there. And I thank Senator Feagin for his really hard work, and I thank Doug Decker for his patience, because he's exhibited a lot of that over this process. But it's approximately half, a very rough approximation, half of our municipalities operate under the aldermanic form of government. It is two people are elected from each ward. There is a mayor elected at large. Some people refer to it as a strong mayor form. It's the only form of government where the mayor has the power to veto, and it's the only form of government where the mayor has the power to break a tie. But the mayor doesn't vote on anything else. Everything else, all the other forms operate differently. So this has always kind of been my favorite form because it's kind of quirky. We're taking a lot of the quirkiness out, but I'll still like it. But we think we're on the way to a better system that actually reads and says what we mean. So we would urge your support of the bill and the amendment. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any further proponents? Seeing none, we'll offer it up for any opponents to amended Senate Bill 64. Seeing none, we'll close the testimony from the floor and offer it to the committee for further discussion or action. Senator Holeen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move to pass.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Senator Holeen for due pass, seconded by Senator Hager on amended Senate Bill 64. Due pass amended. Any discussion on it?
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
I want to thank Senator Feagin and Mrs. Taylor because I've seen instances where you don't think that you have to clear up language until something actually happens. And then you realize, oh, we don't have anything that covers this. Personally, I'd like to add maybe an apostrophe or two just to further mess with the bill, but I think that you finally got it in a good form, so I'll urge the support.
Okay. At this time, we do have a motion for due pass on amended Senate Bill 64 by Senator Holeen and seconded by Senator Hager. All those in favor of the Madam Secretary will call the roll. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed will say nay.
Senator Feagin.
Aye.
Hager.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Heinert.
Aye.
Sutton.
Aye.
Holeen.
Aye.
Hewing.
Aye. Okay, we have a unanimous motion for due pass on amended Senate Bill 64. Looks like it'll stand as is. At this time, we will take up Senate Bill 74. Our good senator is here. At this time, we'll offer it up for proponent testimony. It's to authorize members of certain governing bodies who are displaced by a natural disaster to continue their term of office. Good morning, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Bill Van Gerpen, State Senator, District 19. Out of Tyndall, South Dakota. There are times in our lives when our world gets turned upside down. And when it does, we make some new discoveries. And that's what happened last summer in Delmont, South Dakota. A tornado swept through the town, and damage was most significant. I visited the community just hours after the tornado hit. And just to give you some insight as to what the damage really was, if you think of an L shape of Main Street going straight ahead and then a street going off to the right of Main Street. Main Street goes east and west. When the tornado came through Delmont last spring and summer, it damaged a large church right on the corner of the Main Street and the street going to the right, And then down the next two or three blocks, it just wiped out house after house. A lot of damage by the tornado. Homes were impacted. Families were affected. And then local government was affected as well. And thus is the genesis for the bringing of Senate Bill 74. What followed when after the tornado hit was some questions about the public service and the legal representation of some of the council members. And as a result of that, the municipal leagues, led by Mrs. Yvonne Taylor, drafted some legislation, and you have it in Senate Bill 74, and Mrs. Taylor will address the specifics, Mr. Chairman, of this legislation.
Okay, thank you. Further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 74. Welcome back, Yvonne. You have your badge on now.
I'm a quick learner. Mr. Chairman, Yvonne Taylor with the South Dakota Municipal League. Senate Bill 74 comes to you because by state law, when you no longer live in the district from which you were elected, it automatically creates a vacancy in your seat. And so when this tornado hit Delmont, it hit particularly hard in one ward, aldermanic form again, hit particularly hard in one ward, and two members of their council could no longer live in their houses. So they were displaced from the district from which they were elected. And with everything else that poor city was dealing with, they were calling our office saying, what do we do? Because they don't live there anymore because their house is gone. And so I think common sense came in and you just said, well, they let them keep going. But we wanted to make the technical correction to the law so that if this happens again, if someone is displaced by natural disaster, they can continue to serve until the end of their term. And so that's simply what the bill does, and that's the reason we bring it forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 74. Seeing none, do we have any opponent testimony on Senate Bill 74? Seeing none, we'll close the testimony from the floor and offer it to the committee for discussion or action. Senator Hager.
I have a question for Ms. Taylor.
Okay.
I'm just curious if you guys had thought about maybe putting a time frame on it or a best effort to live in the area.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
Yeah, and that's the reason why we put till the end of their term. Most cities have a two-year term. The maximum anybody ever could do is up to 5 years. But I think the best effort to return is probably implied. If they don't intend to return, they're probably going to resign their seat and say we don't intend to return. But that's why we put the language in about serving until the end of the term.
Thank you. Follow up.
Go ahead.
I do think this is a really great idea and bill, and so I'm not necessarily questioning it, and I see the expiration of the member's term. Is there any other caveat where if a person is actually able to move into a new area of the district, are there any exceptions like that? You know, like maybe going back to what I implied as like a best effort to move back to the area.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
I believe permanent removal to another district would create that vacancy that we talked about. And that's in, I think, Title III somewhere that lists the conditions that determine what constitutes a vacancy of the seat.
Okay. Further questions of Mrs. Taylor? Okay. Thank you. Further discussion or action?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Holine.
I'll move do pass.
Second.
Okay, we have a do pass motion by Senator Holine, seconded by Senator Olson. Any discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
I just echo my comments from the previous bill. Is you don't think that language is necessarily needed until something comes up and you realize that it's not covered. So I'd like to thank the proponents for bringing the bill.
Okay. We have a do-pass motion by Senator Holine, seconded by Senator Olson. All those, Madam Secretary, please call the roll. All those in favor of the motion will say aye. Those opposed, nay.
Senator Feagin.
Aye.
Hager.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Heinert.
Aye.
Sutton.
Aye.
Hewitt, or Holian.
Aye.
Hewing.
Aye. We have a unanimous motion for due pass for Senate Bill 64.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion from Senator Olson and seconded by Senator Holine to place on the consent calendar. All those in favor of the motion will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. This will be placed on the consent calendar. At our meeting this coming Friday on the 5th, we'll be working House Bill 1033, House Bill 1036, House Bill 1037, as well as Senate Bill 95. Do we have any further business to come before the committee this morning? Seeing none, please make sure you leave your folders when you leave, and I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, motion by Senator Holine, seconded by Senator Olson to adjourn. All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Opposed? We are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.